Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The price of gold reached a new high yesterday, topping $1,625 an ounce. It's up sixfold in the last decade. With European countries teetering and the U.S. heading closer to default, investors big and small are pouring money into the yellow metal. This hour on Point, the new gold rush. You can join the conversation. Is this where you're putting your money? Is the brinksmanship in Washington making you yearn for a safe place to park your doubloons? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Gregory Zuckerman. He's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, where he's been closely following the gold market, and he's the author of The Greatest Trade Ever, the behind-the-scenes story of how John Paulson defied Wall Street and made financial history. And John Paulson is one of Wall Street's biggest bulls on gold. Hello there, Gregory Zuckerman.
Great to be here.
Gregory, before we get going, can I just play you a clip about gold? This is from yesterday's Fox Business Channel. The source of this information, Bulls and Bears is the name of the show, when it was announced yesterday that the price of gold hit another all-time high.
Gold continues to glitter, the precious metal settling at another record high today as traders hedge their bets against a possible U.S. ratings downgrade or some kind of government default.
So I guess it must be true. Gold is hitting an all-time high. Gregory, would you tell us why and who's driving it and how we got here, please?
Sure. It's interesting because for years, investors ignored gold. And it was really sort of worry warts and shut-ins and people down in their basements hoarding gold who were fans. And over the last decade, but for sure over the last year or two, there's been sort of, as you mentioned, sort of a new gold rush, and gold's up about 50% last year and about 15% or so this year. Silver has actually done even better. Silver is considered a poor man's gold. And there are two reasons people are buying gold. One is they think that we're going to have inflation and the economy is actually going to perk up a little bit. And it's a bet against the Federal Reserve, which says, hey, don't worry about inflation. Gold has historically done pretty well in times of inflation. It stores value. It's seen as a kind of an alternative to currencies. And so people worry about inflation. And other people look at gold as an insurance contract on all the troubles out there in the world, everything from our own debt situation to that in Europe. So there are two reasons people buying gold, both if they think that the things are going to get much, much better and inflation will result, or if they think things are going to get much, much worse.
Tell us a little bit about the gentleman you wrote about, John Paulson, and I guess he made some bazillions, as it were.
Yeah, well, John Paulson, to me, is emblematic of how for years it was individuals buying gold, and now it's more sophisticated investors and other kinds of people who are jumping on the bandwagon. So, yeah, John Paulson made the assumption a few years ago that we're printing so much money to try to steer the economy towards better territory and to improve things that eventually, historically, when you print a lot of money, it leads to inflation. And that's that's the worry of many kind of more conservative type people. They're worried about the extent that the government is trying to improve things, and the Federal Reserve is taking aggressive steps. And when one does that, potentially that leads to inflation. So you have people like John Paulson worried about inflation. But as I said, it's fascinating to me because more sophisticated investors, there's a guy named David Einhorn, who never considered buying gold just a few years ago, and now he's got a whole vault near Kennedy Airport full of gold, actual gold. And these people often are controlling the gold themselves. So it's individuals, it's optimists, it's pessimists, it's right-wing people, but it's also left-leaning people who are just skeptical of financial leaders. And to me, that's sort of a lesson of the last few years, that the financial downturn in 2008, our leaders let us down, all our financial and political leaders. So people are buying gold as a bet against our leaders.
You know, like any investment, though, you would have to cash it out to take the money. Now, this may be the most flat-footed question you've gotten on this, but if you cash it out, what would you get paid in? You get paid in currency, right?
Well, yes, it is. And it actually leads to a bigger question. To me, in some ways, it's a greater fool kind of investment, because what is gold worth? Well, it's just sort of worth what the next person's going to pay for it, right? There's no real value to gold. It's not like a company. It's not even like agriculture or some other alternatives to inflation where you can actually have some cash coming from the investment. There's no dividends from gold. It's just a bar or a coin. It's really just worth what the next person will pay for it, which smacks of a greater fool kind of investment, almost a Ponzi scheme kind of thing. And the bulls, the proponents of investing in gold, will counter that, yeah, it is just what the next person values gold at. But historically, if you go back centuries, you go back to the Bible, gold has had value. It's continued to have value. So, yeah, it just has value because people find it shiny and it's relatively rare and harder to mine than some other minerals. But because it has had value, it's going to continue to have value. So that's why university endowments are buying it up, central banks, hedge funds, and individual investors.
Maybe we should articulate how much central banks hold and how much gold there is.
Well, it's a good question. People aren't exactly sure. I've heard all kinds of estimates from three Olympic-sized swimming pools will contain the whole world's worth of gold. Some people say two. You know, are we including dental people having gold in their teeth?
I was thinking of a number, but maybe I like this much better.
Well, it's hard. It's actually hard for people to estimate. What I find interesting is that central banks, so you ask who's doing the buying. So central banks like China, they're doing much of the buying lately. They account for about 25% of all new investment demand, gold investment demand, in India is about 23%. So it's not sort of your pessimists and your skeptics and your shut-ins. It's often sophisticated central banks who are saying, we have very little in gold. Let's at least diversify a little bit. And that's the bet among some of the more intelligent gold investors, that just at the margin, the average investor, be it a central bank or a university endowment or an individual investor in their own portfolio, is going to move towards, let's say, I don't know, 5, 10%, 15%. 15% maybe at most allocation to gold. And that itself will send gold prices much higher, because gold's at $1,600 an ounce, but it reached $2,300 an ounce when you adjust for inflation back in 1980. So you could make the argument that there's more room to run.
Okay. Well, let's be joined now by Sid Mitra. And Sid is joining us from Vancouver, Canada. He is a gold analyst with Passport Capital, a $4.7 billion hedge fund, and a significant portion of that hedge fund is invested in gold. Welcome to On Point, Sid Mitra.
Hello, Jackie.
Sid, I think that you were able to hear what we were just talking about, and we were talking about, you know, how much gold really is out there in the world. Why is your hedge fund invested in so much gold?
Sure. So just a quick answer to the question, how much gold is there in the world? All the gold ever mined is still around, floating around somewhere. It's not really destroyed or consumed, and by some estimates, we have about 5.3 billion ounces of gold floating around. It's all the gold ever dug out since the beginning of time. And it's not really a lot of metal, if you think about it. It's it'll fit into a cube of size 67 feet, so it would fit into one very large house. And a lot of effort has gone into digging that out. A lot of wars have been fought over it because humans have historically attributed value to it. We like it. It's shiny. It's pretty. And therefore, we want gold, and we're willing to give goods and services in exchange for it. Why we are invested in gold, I think Greg has touched on some of these points already. I'll quickly recap it. We like gold because there are two major themes that drive our bullish thesis. One is that it is viewed as an alternative currency to the U.S. dollar. If you look at the evolution of currency, first currencies were precious metals, gold and silver. And there are good reasons for that. And that is because it's easily identifiable, it's fungible, people recognize gold, and the quantity of gold that can be mined is constrained by how much we can dig out, as opposed to the quantity of currency that can be generated by central banks that is restricted by someone's ability to hit the enter key on a computer. So gold has value because it is increasingly viewed as a viable alternative to fiat currencies, whose prospects increasingly look not so bright, as evidenced by the debt crisis we're having in the U.S. as well as problems we're having in the EU. So that's one major theme, and that's been touched on. The other reason we like gold, and this is not probably as widely appreciated, is that its prospects from demand emanating from China and India are also very constructive. China has historically, if you look back 2,000-3,000 years, been a consumer of gold. They have a historical affinity for the metal. And since the 40s till until about 2001-2002, gold as an investment was forbidden in China. And then the market was liberated, and the Chinese market is just finding its wings. And the Chinese have gone from being net non-consumers of gold, they never exported, they never really imported gold, to being meaningful consumers in the last couple of years. And this is a massive market, and they are incrementally adding to gold demand in the order of about 200 to 300 tons of gold demand to the overall market every year, which is very meaningful.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Gregory Zuckerman, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and with Sid Mitra, gold analyst for the hedge fund Passport Capital. And Sid Mitra, we were speaking just before the break, and we were assessing what is driving up the price. You had mentioned demand going up in China.
Correct.
And that's where we left off. And I think you said by several hundred tons.
So just some quick stats. China is the world's number one producer of gold. They produce between 300 and 350 tons of gold a year, and until about 2008, they never really imported much gold. In 2009, they went to being net importers. They consume all the gold they make, and they imported about 50 tons.
Hmm.
And in 2010, they imported about 250 tons. And gold is not a very big market. If you think about all the gold mined every year, it's about 2,600 tons. That's roughly 75 or 80 million ounces of gold. And they're adding about 10%, 5 to 10% of incremental new demand in a relatively small market. And that taxes prices. And I think that if you look at what the Chinese will continue to do for the next several years, because they have very limited investment options, if you look at what the average Chinese person can invest in, they can invest in banks where they have negative real rates. They can invest in stock markets, which have been very volatile in China lately. They can't invest in external stock markets. They can buy homes in China, which is a very popular, historically very popular area to park capital in. But the government is trying to do whatever they can to keep home prices from rising. So therefore, homes are not a particularly attractive investment anymore. And they can buy commodities. The most fungible of commodities remain precious metals. And so the Chinese will continue to be on the bid on gold for the next few years at least. And the incremental demand they add to the relatively small gold market will support prices.
Mm-hmm. I've also, having spent a lot of time in the Middle East, certainly a lot of people, gold is part of the dowry, although I think that's hardly part of the big demand in the current price boost. I did want to ask you a little bit, though, about the conservative desire to repeg, you call it fiat currency, the dollar, to the to gold bullion, which President Nixon separated those things back in 1971, I believe. So
correct.
Is that part of the demand here?
You know, that's part of the story that drives the fear factor or drives a relatively small percentage of people into accumulating gold. If you look at the big buyers of gold, the Chinese, the Indians consume about a quarter of all the gold in the world, central banks, large investors, mutual funds, hedge funds, endowments. I don't think they're accumulating gold because they feel that the return to the gold standard is imminent. If there was a return to the gold standard, it would be preceded by a cataclysmic event in the financial markets, probably the end of the U.S. dollars, and that would probably warrant government intervention, which means all bets are off. So I don't think that, the price of gold is being supported meaningfully by people who are buying it because they feel that one day we'll have a new currency backed by gold.
You know, in doing research for this story, I came across a quote, a 100-year-old quote, and Gregory Zuckerman may have seen this too, by the author John Ruskin, and basically, it's too long to say all of it, but he was saying, he's talking about a man who jumps over a ship as it's coming, you know, onto the shoals. He's worried, and he takes his packet of gold bullion with him and sinks, of course, to the bottom of the sea. And so Ruskin asks, had he the gold or had the gold him? And you do wonder about the emotional aspect of all of this.
Yeah. Oh, there's very much an emotional aspect. I mean, both those who are left-leaning and right-leaning both see reason to own it. I would also say it's something of a bet on the middle class around the world, emerging markets, as our guests sort of suggested as well, India and China. I mean, it's both people that are concerned, but also people that think the world is getting a better place, and you've got a growing middle class in China and India. The other point is that it used to be hard to buy gold. What do? You go to a shop and you have some coins, or you try to get what are you going to put a bar? It's hard to store it. Today, it's just so much easier. There are these exchange traded funds that are among the most popular means for investors to buy gold. And honestly, we're in an era of financial bubbles. If you just think back the last 15 years or so, you had tech bubble, obviously, housing, and you can argue maybe oil and some other things. And I think people see things that are going up. Interest rates are low. The Federal Reserve is discouraging people from keeping their money in the bank, and they're piling on, which to me is a little bit troublesome when you just see an investment going up and you buy it. So there's some real good fundamental reasons why it's going up. But as you mentioned, there's also the emotional aspect, and part of the emotional aspect is just piling on and seeing something that's working, an investment that's actually going up and jumping on the bandwagon.
Well, Sid Mitra, I really want to thank you for being with us so early in the day from Vancouver today.
Thank you.
And we are joined now by Thomas Frank from Washington. He's a columnist for Harper's Magazine, and his cover story in the July issue was Gold Faithful, Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals. And Thomas Frank, welcome to the show.
How are you today, Jackie?
I'm doing well, and would you please pass on my compliments for that title of your article? It's fantastic.
Gold Faithful, you like that?
I did like that. You know, before we get started, could I play you a bit of what we have seen here? This was coming from the Jon Stewart Show, and he had talked about the fact that Glenn Beck on his show has been basically advertising a company called Goldline. So this was all the way back to 2009. You've been tracking this this lust for gold for a couple of years now, Thomas?
Well, I wrote about Glenn Beck and the gold advertising. Golly, that was in, was that in 09?
Yes,
I wrote,
09.
I wrote about that. And then I wrote a, but my look, I grew up around gold bugs, so this is something that's very familiar to me. And then I used to be a columnist for the Wall Street Journal before I became a columnist at Harper's, and I once wrote an article. Golly, was that it? That was in 2009 or 2010. I wrote an article suggesting that the U.S. sell. It was a tongue-in-cheek column, right? It was a joke, but suggesting that the U.S. sell all the gold that's in Fort Knox just in order to ruin gold investors. You know, to drive the price down very suddenly And it was a joke, right? Because gold investors tend to be, you know, Glenn Beck. They tend to be sort of Glenn Beck types. And
at the small
that column really introduced me to the gold sentiment out there.
Well, okay, let's pile on in that regard. Then this is from 2009, and amid the controversy over talk radio and television host Glenn Beck's relationship with Goldline, a company we'll talk about in a minute, where you can buy gold. Jon Stewart piled on and had this to say.
Mr. Beck is certainly allowed to use his nightly forum on a respected news network to express all measure of fear, doubt, confusion, paranoia, etc., that he may be feeling. And those feelings may in turn fuel some kind of, I guess you'd say, gold rush. But it's not like the guy has a vested interest in this. It's not like he's a paid spokesman for gold.
That's why I want to talk to you a little bit about Goldline.
See? He's a paid spokesperson for Goldline.
And here's that commercial from Goldline, which airs on conservative television and radio stations. The company is being investigated in the state of California after numerous complaints by customers. At one point, Glenn Beck was described as a paid spokesperson for Goldline, which later changed the wording to radio sponsor. Glenn Beck has read commercials on the radio for Goldline and interviewed Goldline's president on his radio show.
Gold is an asset with intrinsic value, and that's important in these uncertain economic times. Goldline makes it easy for you to get started. Call now for your free investor's kit. There's no obligation to purchase. Our account executives are here Monday through Saturday to serve you. Choose Goldline, the company that has been helping clients acquire gold since 1960. It's common sense. Diversify your portfolio. Call Goldline today.
And so I just have an image, Thomas Frank, of people rushing to the phone, and maybe they get the gold coins and maybe they get the carrot slicer.
Did you say the carrot slices?
Well, the call today, 1-800, get your device. I mean, but people are really doing this. They're buying gold through
these
commercials.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And they're not just buying one of your previous guests mentioned the exchange traded funds, which make it very easy to invest in, to speculate on the price of gold, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people that actually want the physical, tangible gold, the gold coins, issued long ago by Austria-Hungary or something like that.
Does that really work?
Yes, it does. Well, I mean, in the sense that the price of if the price of gold goes up, then the price of your investment would also go up. Now, I did not go into the gold line controversy in the story that I wrote for Harper's. My story was about the sort of moral attitudes behind gold investing here in America.
Well, let's talk about.
I didn't really go there, but from what I understand, they charge a hefty markup for. For the gold coins, I'm not up to speed on that controversy.
Well, let's talk about your story because you do open it the Federal Gold Reserve in New York City, and then you go to Ottumwa, Iowa, and you really do get into what I was trying to get at was the lust, the allure, the desire that people have to possess this metal, and the fact that that's only seems to be intensifying.
Absolutely, yes, there's been gold bugs, for a long time in this country. I mean, for many, many decades. But this is really their moment. One of the things that I point to in the article is this story from, when was it? The year 2000 that ran in the New Yorker magazine, where they were basically making fun of gold investors in the year 2000 because gold was they thought it was the worst investment that you could have had over the preceding 20 years from the early 1980s up till the year 2000. And because we didn't need nobody needed the discipline of gold anymore. It was a relic. Markets supplied all the discipline we needed. And look at the NASDAQ, it was close to 5,000, It was the sort of heyday, the great bull market of the 1990s. It was the high point, and they were, scoffing at these guys. And I remember reading that article and also sort of chuckling, ha-ha, gold bugs, and they're still, clinging to their gold. And, of course, I had exactly the wrong reaction. I should have run out and bought gold, right? Mm-hmm. Right then when I read that thing.
I wonder how many people are kicking themselves. But, when you went to Iowa, you actually profiled people who were campaigning for America to go back to the gold standard.
Yeah, I think you're confusing me with someone else. I didn't go to Iowa in this story. But I do know what you're talking about. There's lots of the Republican candidates for president are talking about a return to the gold standard. This is this comes and goes periodically in the Republican Party, and right now it's having its a great heyday. There's a lot of the argument that I make in the Harper story is that people's attitudes toward gold rises and falls in relationship to their fears about the federal government and about the way it's mismanaged the economy. Because as one of your previous guests mentioned, we have what's called a fiat currency. It's backed not by any precious metal, but by the full faith and credit. This is the phrase they use: the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Well, the U.S. government doesn't look any particularly faithful right now, does it? And it's a sort of gold is something that people are drawn to at times of sort of extreme doubt, like the present.
Well, let's go to a caller. And sorry about that confusion. Karen is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Karen.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have two cautionary points to discuss, and one is that I caution people about buying commodities like gold and not actually receiving the gold itself. I mean, this is a market that's going to go up and down, and if you're buying it very easily and only holding the paper for the gold that you own, you have a chance of losing out when the company that you've been dealing with has gone bankrupt, and then you stand in line with a bunch of creditors trying to collect your gold. So if you're going to play in this market, I would suggest that you actually hold on to the gold itself. And then the second part is for the sellers, people who I'm an appraiser on the Antiques Roadshow, and I would just caution people in selling their gold jewelry outright. Really take your jewelry to a qualified appraiser and ensure that the value of it is greater than what the scrap value would be. We see people being taken advantage of by simply scrapping really wonderful things. They think they're scrapping it, but in fact, the buyers are buying it and turning it over because it has an intrinsic value, the artistic quality of the piece or the age. You know, for instance, the Cartier company in France did dresser sets and desk sets all made with these gold lids on them. They're wonderfully collectible and have more value than their scrap. So those are my two points, and I'll listen to your comments off the air. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. Well, what about that, Gregory? Are people who melt down their jewelry really a part of what's going on here? I mean, if
it's funny,
you get a selling off an earring.
Yeah, the last time gold soared around 1980 was the peak or so. People came out of the woodwork selling everything, and that actually helped push prices back down. You're seeing that a little bit now, and some of us had expected those kind of sales by individual people to, again, push things down, and it's not this time around. So people are actually making some good money and finding things in the attic and things that they don't need. But there are people being taken advantage of. I completely agree with your caller. And also you have to make sure kind of the investment you make that it is backed by people actually holding gold. That said, you don't want to go too overboard. I mean, the conspiracy theorists who are among those who are buying gold will kind of spin any kind of story that every exchange trade fund doesn't hold gold, that you have to really hold it in your home. And it can be dangerous, and it's not the safest thing to be holding so much gold in your home. And you can, of course, these people don't trust banks either, so they don't believe in holding them in vault in banks too. So I don't think you want to get too carried away there. But it does speak to a lack of trust in our society, lack of trust in our politicians and our economic leaders.
Well, actually, Thomas, I think we'll come back to that point about lack of trust in our next segment. This is On Point. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the rush to invest in gold. And we're talking with Gregory Zuckerman, reporter for The Wall Street Journal and author of The Greatest Trade Ever, the behind-the-scenes story of how John Paulson defied Wall Street and made financial history. John Paulson is one of Wall Street's biggest bulls on gold. And with Thomas Frank, columnist for Harper's Magazine. His cover story in the July issue was Gold Faithful, Profiting from Paranoia with Precious Metals. Now, in the movie Goldfinger, British spy James Bond battled a villain obsessed with gold and determined to upend the world gold market. In this scene, Goldfinger explains his obsession as Bond is strapped to a table with a laser ready to slice him in half.
This is gold, Mr. Bond. All my life I've been in love with its color, its brilliance, its divine heaviness. I welcome any enterprise that will increase my stock, which is considerable.
Thomas Frank, we were talking. Would you say that's part of how we feel about gold now, that maybe that's a more commonplace feeling?
That we'll do anything to increase our increase our hoard? That's certainly how it feels these days, you know. there's, you know, a certain mania for the metal. It's kind of bewitching. There's a whole lore of gold. I was really intrigued by what Mr. Zuckerberg was saying before about the suspicion that goes along with gold investing, because, you know, it begins with a suspicion that the government can't manage the currency properly, the government can't manage the economy properly, and you buy gold, but then do you trust the bank? You know, how do you know that the gold you've bought is exactly what it says it is? You know, how do you know it's not a fake? Where do you put it? Where do you store it? You know, and this is sort of part of the lore. I don't know if you've ever seen the old silent movie, this Eric von Stroheim movie called Greed. And it's about, some people who get their hands on, some, you know, fairly poor people who get their hands on some gold. And it drives them mad, of course, with suspicion.
Except that in your piece, Gregory, your investor did make a fortune.
Yes, that is what is funny or interesting and fascinating, that you're getting more sophisticated investors, thoughtful investors who are backing up the truck and trying to get as much as possible. I mean, if you think about it, for years, many of us dismissed the pessimists, the cranks, the conspiracy theorists. The real estate market is going to crash, they said. The euro will never survive. The U.S. dollar is worthless. And one thing we've learned, unfortunately, over the last few years is not to dismiss these people. One thing that I've learned, and it's not to say that the conspiracy theorists, who some of whom don't actually think that we own gold in Fort Knox, they think that's all made up, manipulated. They think that prices are kept low for years and the government has had incentive to do so to keep the dollar higher. I don't agree with those people. But the skepticism of government leaders and our economic leaders, I think it has been borne out. So I think it's smarter to listen to some of the gold bugs than it was a few years ago.
But I think that's what we're talking about, Thomas Frank. You said you grew up with gold bugs. And we have seen people who are in politics saying, Ron Paul comes to mind, look, we need to go back to the gold standard. There is a certain conservative drive, and this is something that you've encountered.
Absolutely. I think going back on the gold standard, though, is a little bit far-fetched. It would be very, very, very tricky to do it. What made the gold standard so attractive was that, well, one reason was, of course, that it prevented inflation. But another was that it was international. You know, countries all over the world did it, and you know they had, it was a way of establishing a sort of an exchange rate. And it for one country to go back on the gold standard, I don't know if it would sort of, you know, bring back the 19th century utopia that a lot of these people dream of. The other problem with the gold standard, of course, is that it was deflationary, which is, can be much more painful than inflation. When the number of people in a country, the population is growing, the economy is growing, all these things are happening, and the money supply is staying the same and not growing, you can have terrible problems, which they periodically had back in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what the William Jennings Bryan campaign in 1896 was all about, what they called the Free Silver Movement. It was some of the most ferocious anti-gold rhetoric you'll ever see. If you go back and read Bryan's famous Cross of Gold speech, I mean, it's just, you know, a savage attack on the gold standard in 1896. It's actually a good read. You should check it out.
All right. Thank you. Let's take a couple of phone calls here. Are you investing in gold? Do you think that there's merit to going back to the gold standard? Let's hear from Kingsley from Norwich, Connecticut. Welcome to the program, Kingsley.
Hi. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. My question to your guest is, for someone like me who is a novice, who have no idea of what kind of investment or how to go about investing into gold, what advice can your guest give to people like me who is thinking of investing into gold or into the market? What is the best advice and how do I go about this?
Can we know just a little bit more about you?
I'm a social worker.
Okay.
And I have no background in the finance field.
All right. Gregory Zuckerman, do you want to take a stab at that?
I don't give investment advice. I'm not allowed to. I would caution people against or thinking twice about gold miners. Those guys you would think would be making lots of profits now, and they're just poorly run, generally speaking. They waste a lot of money. They make acquisitions, and they haven't done a great job of getting gold actually out of the mines. So more people are buying these exchange-traded funds, and that's a low-cost way to do it. There is gold backing it. So many advisors will suggest ETFs, they're called. There's something called GLD. That's the symbol. And others kind of say, hey, have some coins in your home, but don't have too many. It's dangerous, and there's a cost involved as well in storing that.
Well, let's talk about a different kind of investment, perhaps selling your jewelry or other gold items you might have. Joining me now from Weston, Florida is Steve Hansen. He's president of Goldfellow, which runs a website where you can send in your jewelry. It has 34 retail locations, but it also has an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. We want to make sure you're aware of that. And Steve has been in the jewelry business for 25 years. Welcome to On Point, Steve Hansen.
Oh, hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
So are you getting a lot of demand, Steve? Are you seeing Goldfellow, more and more people wondering if they shouldn't sell off antiques and things they might have in the house?
Well, every time that we see the price spike and a great deal of media attention around it, we see our demand double and triple. People get very interested to understand what they have and what it might be worth.
And what do people typically send in? I'd be curious.
Most of what we see is scrap jewelry or jewelry that people no longer are interested in wearing or hanging on to.
And what's the average return on that? Do you have an average?
We do. The average return that we're seeing on the website is somewhere around $1,000.
Mm-hmm. So, but that might pay the rent or buy something that people need. Let's take another call from Pete in Cherryfield, Maine. Welcome to On Point, Pete.
Oh, hey, thank you, Jackie. I'm a big fan of yours over the years of public radio.
Thank you. So what's your question, Pete?
Oh, mine is a comment, and I was looking for some feedback. I have an alternative gold investment plan other than holding the actual gold, which is a USAA precious metals fund, which has done remarkably well for a retired guy with a few bucks over the last 3 or 4 years, in which... the fund itself was declared by Kiplinger as, I think, the fund of the decade.
Hmm.
And I just lucked out on this about 3 years ago, and it has provided me with several thousand dollars in income that I desperately needed to augment.
Well, and to augment, I believe, a shortfall, obviously. And... well, this is the kind of thing, Steve Hansen, that you must be seeing a great deal of. People thinking not that they are investing in a market, but that they are going to supplement some sort of shortfall at home with something they don't really need. Hopefully it's something they don't really need. But I don't know. Maybe your customers are bringing in more and more of things they actually wear.
Well, we're seeing a tremendous amount of wealth transfer in terms of people trading one asset for another, gold for cash or silver for cash in our business. A lot of this we feel is, and see every day in the customers, is victims of the economic circumstances where people have lost their jobs and need funds to pay for life expenses.
Tell me exactly how it works.
Here.
Would you please?
Sure. Basically, a consumer will bring us or send us their material or items, and we evaluate them and make them a purchase offer. If the offer is accepted, we give them a check on the spot.
Hmm. Well,
Jackie, if I could just step in, it's Greg here. I would just caution, I don't know our guest's business at all. I'm sure it's a fine business. But the difficulty with selling your jewelry and gold, obviously, is that it's hard to compare pricing. So our guest might give a good price. He might not. Others might give better prices. It's hard to tell. So just if you're going to do that, try to get different bids and offers and don't sell just because it seems like a lot of money. Maybe you can do better.
All right. Well, we do want to point out that Steve has been given a AAA rating from Better Business Bureau. And Steve Hansen, president of Goldfellow, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
You know, when you talk about America and gold, either Greg or Thomas, would you say that how does our relationship compare, Thomas, I know this wasn't specifically in your article, to how Europeans view gold?
Wow. That's something it's Tom Frank here. I I'm about to say I don't know the answer, so.
But I mean, are we just more willing to say, to put our trust in this metal than our counterparts across the ocean?
Well, I would step in and argue that actually we're a little less. We've historically been more confident of the stock market and things like that relative to people in other countries. But when you talk about emerging markets, China and India and the average person there, as you yourself mentioned, the dowries often in Middle East and elsewhere are with gold. And they actually put more faith in gold than they do in institutions like stock markets. So in some ways, we're playing catch up here in the United States.
Let's take another call. Michael is calling from Boston. Welcome to On Point, Michael.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm so surprised that nobody has mentioned the utility of gold in high-tech industry. This is the most malleable metal. That means it bends without breaking. You can flatten it into foil that's much thinner than aluminum foil. It conducts electricity. It does not rust. And you can draw it out into a very, very thin wire, which is ductile or ductility, that property. My father is a metallurgist, so that's why I know these things. And when you tell me that places like industries like China and India are buying up a bunch of gold, to me that means they're trying to position themselves as high-tech industries, and I'm wondering if that's the case, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Gregory?
My understanding, that's not the case. There's a small percentage of demand for gold that comes from industry. Yes, it can be used in different things, high tech, but that's not the bulk of the demand. When it comes to central banks, they're buying it for their for investment purposes, and investors and people are just sort of worried about the world, worried about our leadership, worried about where things are going, and that's kind of spurring things.
Let's take one more call. Hello, Walter in Providence. Just quickly.
Hi. I was just calling because there's been a lot of talk about how the current gold rush is a response to fears of instability of the economy and so forth. But I was wondering if there's any aspect of this that could be driving the instability. Like we know that gold is a large advertiser on the Fox News, and I'm just wondering how much of this debt crisis might be a result of people actively trying to destabilize the currency, because it would drive up the price of gold. I mean, that would be a huge windfall if the economy collapsed for big gold holders. And that's my question.
Wow, that's a Tom Frank here. That's fascinating. I would be very curious about that, because what we are talking about here, and I meant to mention this earlier, but somehow I didn't, is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where the people who are really causing the showdown and the disaster in Washington, D.C. that's going on even as we speak, these people tend to be the sort of, they come from the movement that Glenn Beck is the leader of, okay? They I can't go down the list of individuals and say that they're all gold bugs or anything like that, but gold bugs are a part of their movement, and it wouldn't surprise me if, to learn that lots and lots and lots of them were gold holders. Now, to think that they would take that to such an outrageous extreme is, of course, that's not that's not fair to them, and I wouldn't want to go down that road. But on the other hand, I mean, it is when we talk about the instability of the dollar, and when we talk about the non-trustworthiness of the U.S. government, it's actually being it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's being made to happen by people who already didn't believe in it, right? By people, I'm sorry, I got that backwards, by people who did believe in it going in.
Well, that is all the time that we have. I think that gold is something we could talk about all day, and you can continue the conversation on the On Point podcast and on our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Thomas Frank from Harper's Magazine, I want to say thank you. Gregory Zuckerman from the Wall Street Journal, thanks both of you for being with us today.
Well, sure thing. Anytime.
I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook, and you're listening to On Point.